This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato. I hit it hard, man.
8:06 here on Sports Map Radio Network. Good Saturday morning, everyone. My name is Will Doctor. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour presented by Insperity HR. That makes a difference. What an opening two rounds at Torrey. Charlie, where are all the stars?
All the stars. You know, there's stars there, but they might not be your stars. Jordan Spieth's at the end of the table. You know, Rory's not doing what we want him to do. Dustin Johnson is not there. But there are guys that are able to challenge the U.S. Open setup. And that's what it's all about. And what, you know, if you play in the morning, in the afternoon. But, you know, Louis Oosthuizen is hanging around. He's been good at the last major. The PGA, he could have won that, but Richard Bland,
the Cinderella story this week, 48-year-old Richard Bland, who shot 70-67 the last 2 days.
Not too bad. He just won his first tournament after 77 years of playing golf. No.
And some might say that, you know, he just got hot on Friday, but like we talked about before the show, the last 8 winners have shot under par on Friday.
It's incredible statistic that they come up with. They can research everything. But the bottom line, will he be there Sunday afternoon? I think the percentage are against him. John Rahm, he's lurking. What's that music from the shark? Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, 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 boom. And another one, Kevin Streelman, who seemingly keeps playing well in majors and keeps – his steady Eddie golf up. You know, some other big names throughout the leaderboard. Rory's hanging in there. You know, Scottie Scheffler, the Texas native UT graduate. We have a great show for you today. We're going to discuss where Brooks and Bryson stand after the first two rounds. Bruce Davidson will be joining us at the top of the hour to review last week's Palmetto Championship. We're also going to talk more on Torrey Pines and who we think is going to be victorious come Sunday. So don't go anywhere. We'll do that right here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on Sports Map Radio Network, presented by Insperity HR. That makes a difference.
Listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
Okay, 8:12 here on Sports Map Radio Network. Welcome back to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, brought to you by Insperity HR. That makes a difference. Charlie, who's the biggest surprise this week after the first two rounds at Torrey Pines?
Bubba Watson. He's been battling nerves, anxiety. After a long period of time, golf will take its toll. You know, there's a lot of things that happen to people, and they lose their confidence. And golf is all about confidence, and you have anxieties about airports and airplanes, and you know it's rough. And sometimes, you know, Jack Nicklaus would play 16 tournaments a year. That's it. These guys are playing 25 to 30 tournaments and all over the world, and so it's nerve-wracking. But Bubba is the big surprise. Will he be there at the end? Sure, he's won 2 majors. He has it. He's got his chewing gum in order, you know.
He's got the like Phil, he's got himself a CBD sponsor to calm some of those nerves. But
he's in the land of fruit and cherries anyway.
Yeah,
out of California.
That's how he's kind of maybe lowered the stress in his creative
that's
mindset.
Right.
That Bubba thrives off of Charlie. I want to ask you, so many high-ranked players at the top of this leaderboard, besides Bland and Henley. I want to start by discussing world number five, Bryson DeChambeau. And fortunately, the drama created by Brooks that has turned into a headache for the golf world hasn't been overlooked or overly involved in the narrative this week at the U.S. Open. But the part of Bryson's game that has caught my attention this week is his wedge play. The distance wedge play has been shockingly poor for Bryson, not only this week, but as a whole this season. He's outside the top 100 in the world in all stat lines between 75 and the 125-yard mark, arguably one of the most important scoring distances in the game. Is it time for Bryson to start thinking about going to conventional length wedges, or is his practice time maybe focused so much on distance that his touch has fallen behind?
Well, sure. The engineering of golf clubs is really complicated because it's speed, it's angle of attack, it's controlling the face. And I always learned growing up, and especially when Mr. Claude Harmon came into town and his son Dick, how important the lie angle of a wedge is versus a lie angle of a two iron. The shorter clubs, their lie angles are flatter, and that will ensure that they don't go left or you won't have two misses. So you've got to have the wedges dialed in correctly. I think he's probably spent too much time on his driver hitting at 275,000 yards, you know. I mean, exaggeration. But yes, he better look at his equipment, and I think he can become better if his shafts resemble more of the traditional wedges. I mean, it's just makes sense to me that the upright club for a wedge is not that good.
And when talking about a two-way miss, out of all the U.S. Open venues that you're familiar with, obviously you've played in a couple yourself, is Torrey more open for the player that's having a little, you know, some issues off the tee left and right? It just seems like a little bit more of an open U.S. venue. I know there's a lot of rough protection, but what do you think about that?
Well, one thing versus last year's U.S. Open at Wingfoot, and even they have cut down a lot of their trees to open the golf courses up, get more ventilation, grow better grass. Torrey Pines is the same way. They have eliminated a lot of trees, so the air is moving differently, and you know, you can see the hang gliders out there. But the golf course is really fair. They've got graduated rough. You can see by the scores, you know, they're five unders leading, and they haven't had a bad day of wind yet, but that's not the case in June. So the open courses are well thought out, and, you know, where you move them from the East Coast, West Coast, you know, mid country, they're all have their own characteristics.
Let's move on to Brooks Koepka, who has had an incredible U.S. Open streak that came to an end yesterday. But he shared some insight on his immaculate U.S. Open run, and he really emphasized the discipline that it takes at a U.S. Open to not do anything that you can't, just to play within yourself, which doesn't seem like much. But before Saturday 73, Brooks Koepka had six consecutive rounds in the 60s. That's most all-time at a U.S. Open. And six consecutive subpar rounds, which tied Sam Snead. As much as I'm not a fan of some of Brooks's unnecessary drama to enhance the PGA Tour social media fund, it seems undeniable, you know, that there hasn't been a player this dominant at U.S. Open since Tiger Woods.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. I'll give you that. And he's had a moment in the sun where he really, for a couple years, he won everything. Everything went his right way when he won his U.S. Open at Shinnecock. He got it up and down from what back of the one of the greens. That'll never happen again. Special things happen at the special right times. Yesterday, he played pathetic. Yeah. I mean, he was all over trying to hit shots he shouldn't hit. And the golf gods, you know,
Yeah, when you're not that humble at the rest of their events, they're, you know, they're not going to be very respectful to you at the U.S. Open.
You know, it's a funny game, but sometimes you just got to leave well enough alone. I mean, if we think back on how Jordan Spieth won the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay, it was given to him. You know, I mean, really, Dustin Johnson had that mental breakdown, and then the Open Championship where he's hitting it out of the range and making 60-footers, and that's not going to happen every year. And so everybody gets their time, and this week we're going to see if John Rahm is the player that he is. I think he's the favorite going into the weekend.
And we talked before the show about the chip on John Rahm's shoulder after getting DQ'd from the Memorial after, to me, in the reading that I did throughout the week, was a very up-in-the-air ruling with the PGA Tour. He tested positive for COVID-19 after 3 negative tests throughout the week. And then just 6 days later, he had a negative test. So really frustrating for Rahm. And you know, Cantlay ended up winning the Memorial and boosted up to number 1 on the FedEx Cup. You know, getting DQ'd from the Memorial could cost Rahm up to $13.1 million at the end of the year.
Yes, it's, it's by one little, one more injection or vaccination could have solved a lot of problems. But you can't count money that's not in your pocket.
Right.
You can't do that. You know, he was unfortunate. I think the PGA Tour acted correctly. All the timing, if you research everything, was done right. They didn't find out about his test until he was hitting the second shot into the 18th hole that Friday. So, but now he can come back. I mean, he's proven that he's strong but the guy that's got my attention and he's such a good player. He just got to make a few more putts. Is Xander Schauffele?
Yeah, world number 6 has really kind of flown under the radar this week, but playing some spectacular golf, hitting a lot of fairways this week, and not putting himself in the worst places around the green, which seemingly sets you up for success around Torrey Pines.
It does, but he's got to get that putter to heat up and not miss the putts you're supposed to make.
And okay, so when we come back, we're going to talk to Bruce Davidson, executive director for the Congaree Foundation, about how the Palmetto Championship finished and the philanthropy of the Congaree Foundation. And later on, we will discuss how Bryson's arch nemesis, Brooks, is coming along in the U.S. Open and what his Friday's 69 meant for the U.S. Open record book. We will also discuss Matthew Wolff's return to competitive play and how that is a prime example of the mind needing some clearing to play the game that is so closely related to life. We will do that right here on the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on SportsMap Radio Network, presented by Insperity, HR that makes a difference. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
Okay, 8:25. Welcome back to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on SportsMap Radio Network, brought to you by Insperity HR. That makes a difference. We're going to go right to the progressive guest line and welcome in Bruce Davidson, the executive director of the Congaree Foundation. Bruce, thank you for taking the time to join us today. How did the weekend go at the Palmetto Championship, and did the course meet your expectations after that incredible finish last weekend?
Morning, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Okay, there was a couple of questions there. First one was, I don't think anybody likes to watch what happened to Chess and Hadley. You know, he bogeyed the last 3 holes to give it away. But from our point of view, I think it was, Mr. Friedkin said to me earlier in the week that these guys are going to murder the golf course because it had rained so much on Sunday and Monday, and it played very soft on Thursday, which gave the opportunity for some scores that we normally don't see here. We had no control over how they played the golf course. They played it at 7,500. And with the fairways being firm, even though it rained, the fairways are still firm. I mean, I'd like to see the tees further back because some of the holes they played, number 8, number 17, well, we built those holes to test the best players in the world, and they play them way up, which I didn't like, but no control over that. But I did say to Dan on Friday how much you think Chess and Hadley would pay for 11 under right now. And that turned out to be the number. We know what our course is like. We know how tricky the finish is. We know how difficult it is to hit quality shots off tight lies under pressure to greens that are very, very firm. So we were delighted for the best players in the world, or some of them anyway, to be here in 11 under to win. I think that shows that Congaree has teeth and should be hosting major events.
Well, Bruce, once again, I congratulate you. I've known you for many, many years, and this next move that you've made into philanthropy, working for two gentlemen that have done so much because they're so successful and building a facility like you have, really, like this week, you went from a tour championship to a junior camp. And these kids come from all over, and you nurture them, and you're giving them the opportunity. Tell us a little more about your foundation and what you're doing. I mean, that's the backstory of this whole deal.
Yeah, I think it's the opportunity to have our story told across the world last week was one of the reasons that we did a tour event. It wasn't just to host the best players in the world. We wanted the world to see the vision of Mr. Friedkin and Mr. McNair and what they allowed us to set up here. And this week is the first week of what we call our CGGI, our Congaree Global Golf Initiative. COVID has kind of affected the way we do it, but we'll still do 36 kids this year. There's nine kids currently here. And Charlie, I'll have to tell you, I think this might be the best bunch of players and kids we've ever had from all over the United States. And next week, we'll do 6. But in the month of August, we'll do 21 virtual sessions with children. And they get everything from academic advice, athletic advice, TPI fitness, etiquette, lots of SAT prepping, golf instruction. So it's a very, very immersive college preparatory program, which so far 68 kids have gone through. And the majority of them are playing golf in college, and if not in, going to. We've secured about $2.2 million of college scholarships for these kids, which is essentially what we do, trying to place them in the best colleges suitable for them.
Well, before what happened with our world with the COVID, you were able to bring kids in from all over the all over the world, and you even brought some kids that I was aware of, the Argentine children, and children that can never ever pay for what you guys are doing, and it's just absolutely incredible. And those two kids that you've changed their lives and their goals in life. But the where does the money come from, and can our listeners contribute to the fund that you need to do all of this?
Sure, I think if you go on the Congaree Foundation website, there's a donate button. All donations are gratefully accepted, but. You know, Charlie, the whole premise was that we have ambassadors here. We don't have members. We had two members. Mr. McNair passed away, so Mr. Friedkin's the only member. And everyone's an ambassador, which means you're invited in, and you've got to buy into what we're doing here, and you've got to participate. And I think I read last night that we've raised $11.5 million in donations from our ambassadors. And we use that money very judiciously. To change the lives of well-deserving or underserved children, not only through our CGGI programs, but locally. Jasper County is a very poor county, and you know we bought a 9-hole golf course called Sergeant Jasper. We're renovating it so that kids can play for free. We have 250 kids playing golf at the high school, local high school, which went from zero
when we started. So we're very proud of that. And Boys and Girls Club, we've done a workforce program. There's lots of things we do. And the ambassadors are the main source of funding for that. And proud to tell you the funding keeps coming. So
it's really neat. And what is the website for the more information?
Just go to Congreve Foundation.
Okay, .com?
Type it in. Yeah, I think it is. I should know, but I think it's congrevefoundation.com. Yeah, it might be .org, but yeah, just go on there and you'll find it. It's pretty easy to find, and it just tells you all the things that we do, and there is a donation page.
Okay.
And once again, for listeners, that's the Congreve Foundation. It's the founders of Congreve that have set out to create a new philanthropic model that unites ambassador members with a shared purpose to positively impact the lives of young people. Bruce, the event at Congaree, it replaced the RBC Canadian Open this year. That's played up at St. George. But Congaree really lived up to the tour standard. Is there any talk about getting a tour event back to this course in 2022?
Oh, I wouldn't think so. I mean, it's like every private club, you know, you do a tour event and it's not just the 1 week, you take it away from our ambassadors, but take it away for the prep weeks and da 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 da. Quite frankly, we did this in 72 days. And I keep saying there's a reason you get a year. And that was an unbelievable combined effort from all of our staff and ambassadors, the teams that we hired to put this thing on. So, I'm not saying no, but I wouldn't think so. But it was a proof of concept in many ways, because it's no secret that we finished second to Medina for the 2026 President's Cup, which was kind of taken from Harding Park. And it's also no secret that we weren't happy with that. We thought we gave a great presentation, and that the tour players in many ways would have preferred to play here, because it's a brawnier golf course. It was really designed for match play, to be honest. You saw the finishing holes, how tricky they are. But anyway, we didn't get it. And I think the tour wanted to see how we handled an event. And we had limited fans. We were only allowed 5,000 a day. But, you know, we can do anything that any of the organizations wants. We have 2,000 acres here, so we can park, I think, 26,000 cars.
26,000?
Yeah, cars.
Unbelievable.
So we're pretty charged up that we should get another one. Now, whether that's with the PGA Tour or the USGA or the PGA of America, I don't know. But, President's Cup, we'd love to think we would be a good enough golf course to host an Open. Knowing some of the courses they've gone to in the last decade, I know we are. And the PGA Championship is a huge event. It was very successful. And once again, South Carolina stepped up to the plate. So who knows? But, yeah, we're keen to do another big one. But it would be a big one next time.
Bruce, thank you so much for joining us. And we applaud you for your time and effort of giving back to the game of golf.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you for having
Bruce,
me
Bruce, thanks
show.
A million. And look forward to seeing you soon.
Okay, Charlie. Take care, buddy.
Thank you.
Well, Charlie, what a great program Bruce Davidson has.
The golfing community, worldwide is so gracious, and we enjoy a game, but most of the time we're doing things for others through the game, which is really nice. I mean, we're involved in the Spirit International Championship, so it's great, and we're going to come back and we're going to talk more golf, and right.
Absolutely. When we come back, we will discuss a refreshed Matthew Wolf, who is a shot back of the league, lead at the U.S. Open. We will also talk about two unlikely leaders who have shown that golf needs its underdogs. We will be right back on the other side of the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, presented by Insperity HR, that makes a difference. And we're looking forward to talking about more stars that, have been out of the loop recently, like Rafael Cabrera Bello, Bubba Watson, and of course, Matthew Wolf. But this is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, presented by Insperity HR, that makes a difference. Stay right with us.
You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Powered by Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
Okay, 40 here on Sports Map Radio Network. Welcome back to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour presented by Insperity HR that makes a difference. There are a lot of players at the top of the leaderboard that haven't been playing well coming into the U.S. Open. Charlie, what do you think about the top 20 heading into the weekend?
Well, I know, were you alive the last Masters that Bubba Watson won?
Yes, I was.
Who did he beat?
Jordan Spieth. Well, he beat Louis Oosthuizen in his first and Spieth in his second, 2013.
Louis Oosthuizen. Who's up there in the leaderboard?
Louis Oosthuizen.
It's, you know, if the history is correct, Friday is more important than Saturday in the Open. And the big move, Bubba Watson, 67. He's getting his game back in shape. He's getting his anxiety taken care of. But looming really big in a bounce back is John Rahm. He's won at this facility. He is bouncing back from an unfortunate, you know, bout with the COVID. So he's going to be good. But then you look at Xander Schauffele. This kid is really a good player. He's top 10 in the world. I mean, despite his putting, and if his putting can hold up today, he's got a good chance of Sunday afternoon, the last nine holes, being a good position. But, you know, it's just so hard to guess golf on Saturday who's going to be there Sunday.
Absolutely. And I was thinking to myself after round one that Torrey is unlike any other U.S. Open venue in the sense that, you know, and I was going to ask you, can players seemingly, you know, find their game at this course? You know, we talked about Bubba. Some other examples are Rafa Cabrera Bello, who's at the top of the leaderboard, of course, Matthew Wolf, who's one shot back, and also making his first start in quite some time. What makes this setup so different, unlike, you know, a Marion or an Oakmont, where players can maybe just, you know, not drive the ball straight, still post a score around here?
Well, it's expectation. A lot of players enter the U.S. Open and they qualify and they get to the golf course and their expectations are so low. They're just happy to be there. I was one of them. You know, I knew I didn't have a chance. So the scoreboard today with Bland being on top, a 48-year-old journeyman golf professional from London to be at the top of the U.S. Open to think he can beat who's behind him, you know, I'm not counting on that. Henley is also, he's never, you know, had any success in any majors. And that air on Sunday morning, you
it
know.
It gets thin, huh?
It really, it's a nervous city, nervous Nelly. And so you got to go with the thoroughbreds, you know. Streelman, great ball striker, but the moment of truth, can he bring it home on the last nine holes? I don't think so. I think the long shot is Scottie Scheffler. He plays a lot like Jack Nicklaus. He hits the ball really high. He can stop it probably better than most people. He drives the ball long, and he can be a pretty good driver. But the most important thing about him is his putting. He's an excellent putter. And all the way through junior golf, so it's going to set up for a nice U.S. Open on Sunday. But you know, how do you see it? You're a different generation than this old man.
Well, I certainly agree that Scottie Scheffler can create havoc this weekend at Torrey Pines. I think U.S. Open setup are perfect for him. I remember hearing a story from Coach John Fields at the University of Texas that growing up, Scottie's dad would sit behind him, and it wasn't, you know, I don't know, you know, what your thoughts are about this, but how you're going to shape the ball relates a lot to setup. Well, Scottie's dad would tell him, you're going to set up square, and I'm going to tell you at the top of the backswing whether you're going to hit a draw or fade, and that's how Scottie became such a good ball striker. But You know, the one that really stands out to me and someone who I think can really control their nerves come the weekend here at Torrey is Matthew Wolf, who's a shot back. And after the second round, he talked about his low expectations heading into the week after a long layoff from the game to refresh the mental side of things. Let's hear that sound from after round two, after being asked about his expectations to start the week.
Said, what would be a successful week before the week even started? And I said, for me, just to enjoy it. And no matter how I played, and obviously it's a lot easier to play well when you're, or to be happy when you're playing well, but it took a lot to even get here. And, you know, it's just times like that where you're trying to look at the small things as wins. And obviously I'm in a really good spot to contend and possibly win the U.S. Open, but no matter how the weekend goes, I'm putting a check mark on this week as a success already.
Now, remember, Wolf was in the final pairing with Bryson DeChambeau just a year ago, 2012.
Where was it?
Wingfoot.
Wingfoot.
And how often do you see a player, you know, just a year after, you know, in contention, seemingly playing the best golf of his life, go through and need a mental break like Wolf needed?
Well, sometimes, you know, the joy of victory and the agony of defeat, and the defeats in golf are more often than not. And so when he finished second to DeChambeau last year, it that hurts. And some it takes people a long time to recover. And so we got, you know, two or three good stories going into the weekend. DeChambeau is of course, you know, the social media king of the airways. But beyond that, you know, all of a sudden you're looking at Justin Thomas. You know, he's at even par. Koepka's still at even par. Lee Westwood, who just got married recently, and Rory McIlroy. But you know, you can come back from five or six shots. You know, Johnny Miller shot 63 to win his U.S. Open at Oakmont. So anything can happen.
Absolutely. I really like Rory heading into this weekend as well. It's just his game is on a bit of a roller coaster, and it was riding full speed on Friday. He had four bogeys, three birdies in his first nine holes. And that continued bogeyed 2, 4, and 5, and then ended up birding 6 and 9 coming home. So it's really that roller coaster that we're so used to seeing with Rory. And I think back to Wolf, I really think Matthew Wolf entered his tour career with such expectation to win and playing every event on the schedule. You know, normally, you know, and this being said, there's no excuse. Any college player right out of school would love to have the opportunities to play a full tour schedule. But I think normally a senior finishes their season at the end of May, beginning of June, play out their amateur career in the summer, and then go to Q school in October or December. And Wolf, you know, maybe he hit the pedal to the metal right when he was done with school, when OSU won the national championship in 2018. And it just seemed like he never really got a chance to regroup and maybe take in some of the emotions that come with being on the PGA Tour at 21 years old.
Oh, definitely. And all of a sudden he opens up his checkbook and he's got $2 million in there, cash. Are you kidding me with the responsibility kids have? But who was the last person to win the U.S. Open as their first tournament?
Was it Tiger Woods?
Uh-huh. How about Jack Nicklaus? 1961.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Oakmont.
Unbelievable. And that's...
What kind of ball flight did he have?
A fade.
What kind of ball flight? High.
High fades.
High fades.
High fades into those firm greens.
You know, and a great putter. So, once again, I'm going to return back to John Rahm, who has won at Nicklaus's golf course. I think he's the odds-on favorite to get there. But, as I say, the good Lord only knows.
And Rahm, just like Jack and at Oakmont, Rahm is also a big advocate of the hard high fade.
That's it.
Is that the ball flight, the predominant ball flight that is going to move forward in the game? And players are going to mostly stick to that fade.
The golf ball is so hard; it doesn't move so much, and the hook is really kind of been eliminated from the good player because of the way they can dominate with the swing path, and they swing more left with the face open. So, yeah, most all the players, you don't see any slingers anymore. So, but it's a straight game, and sometimes it's hard to play a straight shot.
Before we hit the break, let's jump over to Brooks and Bryson, who, you know, in the past weeks during the show, we've talked a lot about their kind of drama between them. We've talked to Bill a lot about it. Brooks and Bryson have played their way into the same exact score heading into the weekend at the U.S. Open, both even par. However, the way that the PGA Tour makes the pairings, they're still not paired together. Charlie, do you want to see these guys shoot 200-400 today and have a chance to go head-to-head to close this tournament out?
You know, no. If it happens, it happens. I don't want to have their story be the story. I think I want golf to be the story, and it would be terrific if Richard Bland won. I mean, what a magnificent accomplishment that would be. It just shows you, you know, like last week at Congaree, the rookie won because he didn't have any expectations of winning.
didn't even think Higo wasn't talked about the entire weekend.
No.
And, you know, I think there's also something to be said about, you know, earlier this year we heard about a professional tour overseas being started and how they were going to pay players to come and play. If that was the case, if the U.S. Open was in that professional circuit, we wouldn't have guys like 48-year-old Richard Bland and Russell Henley,
right,
who's coming off a miscut at the Memorial and a 71st at the PGA. We wouldn't have these guys to test the big dogs like Bryson and Brooks.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. Open is one where anybody can play and qualify, and club pros to taxi drivers to anybody. And I salute the USGA for doing that. And I wish Richard Bland a good stead this weekend.
And moving right along, when we come back, we will discuss our picks for the U.S. Open. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on SportsMap Radio Network, presented by Insperity and HR that makes a difference. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Charlie Epps Golf Hour on the SportsMap Radio Network.
By Insperity.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Bill Harmon and the golf doctor himself, Charlie Epps. Here's John Granato.
This is not John Granato. This is Charlie Epps. John is away having fun with his daughter in Washington, D.C. But I want to talk to you a minute about HR and about Insperity. And to get back on the road to success after what we've been through with COVID, business needs a plan, an HR strategy that supports their business strategy. Insperity can help develop an HR strategy, one that includes access to Fortune 500 level employee benefits. That's how you're going to keep your great employees. That's how you're going to get your company going the right direction. Lord only knows we have a lot of different government loopholes that are, you know, that you have to fight. But Insperity can definitely help you get back on the road to success and make an impact with your employees. So after so many years of being able to talk about Insperity, we're proud to have them as our sponsor. So log on to Insperity.com, and I guarantee you, you're going to find some great help.
Charlie, let's make our picks for the 2021 U.S. Open at Torrey Pines.
I thought you'd just say what a great ad I just did for Insperity.
Well, it's unbelievable. It's HR that makes a difference. They are the best.
That's it. Okay. You got it. Let's make our picks.
So I'll start it off. My pick for the U.S. Open this weekend is Matthew Wolf. You know, his game seems perfect for this setup, and out of anyone on the leaderboard, I feel like he has the best chance to go low. 8 birdies in the first round. tied for anyone, tied for the most out of any first round in the past 15 years, and tossed up four more birdies on Friday. Charlie, who's your pick for this weekend?
My picks, we're going to have a three-way tie. Louis Oosthuizen, Bubba Watson, and John Rahm. They're going to play for it. You know,
it's not 18 holes anymore, is it?
No, it's aggregate. So, yeah, I just hope we have that kind of a fun afternoon. We watch good golf. We watch some, you know, you'll watch some train wrecks. But Watson, Rahm, and Louis Oosthuizen would be a great three-way tie play and see who becomes a winner.
And Charlie, what do you have going on the rest of the weekend? Is Charlie Wiley have any events coming up soon?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's going to play an AJGA tournament next week. We're going to go out and practice today. I'm going to go see my other grandson, Ben Wiley. He plays in a playoff for starting the playoffs for the Little League World Series. So it's a fun weekend for families.
Well, Charlie, we had a great show here today. Thank you, Sean Mapes, the producer behind the glass. I'm Will Doctor. That's Charlie Epps. This is the Charlie Epps Golf Hour presented by Insperity HR that makes a difference. Have a great weekend, everybody.